Shine, make them wonder what you got. Make them wish that they were not on the outside looking bored. That's what we've been talking about now for quite a bit. I'd like to tell you we've been talking about it for 9 weeks, but the reality is we've been talking about this for 5 years. Today we're going to end what we're calling our logo party, our last letter that's going up there. If you read the board, you already know what the word is for today. But I'm hoping that even though the sermon series is going to end, we're going to take the principles that we learned here and we're going to build a church that will shine. Shine before all men. Let them see good works in them. Let them glorify the Lord. But I want you to kind of take you back through this journey that we've been on, and it starts with our vision. Remember what we're trying to be? We are trying to develop a passion for God, and we are trying at the same time to develop compassion for people. The two must go hand in hand. If we just build a passion for God, all people are going to see us as is just these people that just think we're better than everybody else. But if that passion goes along with compassion, and they begin to see not only that we love God, but we love people, they'll begin to wonder. And then when they begin to wonder, we know exactly the path we want them to take, right? We know this picture. We've seen it a bunch of times over the 5 years. It's just really simple. We're going to take them from our community. We're going to move them into our crowd. We're going to teach them about Jesus in our crowd, and then we're going to help them to develop a connection with who Jesus is. And after they develop that connection, we're going to help them become committed to following Christ. That hasn't changed. You're probably sick of seeing that picture. You'll still see it some more because it'll come back up. This is our mission, how we see ourselves reaching. And then we went into the idea of exactly those little parts that go between it. How do we do that? Well, first we have to see the field. We have to look out of the world and we have to see that there are people out there that are lost and dying and in need of Christ. And after we see the field, well, y'all know where we go next, right? We have to live life between the trees. Each and every day, making the decision to choose Christ over the way that I want to do things. To choose Jesus' path over the way I want to do things. It's that head and heart decision that Jesus had to make. We have to do that every single day because then people look at the choices we're making and they begin to wonder, what's wrong with you people? Well, whatever it is, I'd like that to be wrong with me. And then after we begin to live our life between the trees, then we get to this idea of shine. What we have been talking about for the last 6 weeks, 5 letters plus the introduction. So here we go, and we know exactly now how we're supposed to shine. What is it that I am supposed to do to shine Christ? And we spelled it out for you. We are supposed to serve God with all of our hearts. We're supposed to be doing the things that God wants us to do, not just because we think we're doing, but because we want to serve God. After we serve God, we want to honor God with our worship. We want to honor God in such a way that people see us when we worship and they're like, wow, they have something that's special, something that's different. We want to invite others to come. We introduced the idea of these little seed cards that you can take anywhere and everywhere and hand them out with a simple invitation, come, everything is ready, because we have something that can answer the problems in your life. We want to invite others to come. We want to notice the needs of others and meet them. Not just see the needs. Not just see that people are hurting. Not just see that people are in trouble. We want to see it, and then we want to respond to it. Now, there's one more. I'll give it to you in just a second. But I want you to see how this is breaking down. Those first two are all about our passion for God. The last three are all about our compassion for people, because there's a key word in the last three. And by the way, that's a typo in your bulletin because Lynn printed them before I got back to fix it. But that's okay. You're going to see we have one key word that combines those other three together, and it is the word others. Invite others. Notice the needs of others and encourage others in their walk. You know, Jesus kind of summed up this entire message in one simple little statement: to love God with all your heart, mind, body, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. That's where this breaks down. Two things to direct our passion toward God, and three things to focus ourselves on the needs of others. Encouragement. Yeah, that's what we need these days, don't you? I mean, just through those weeks, just that moment that things are going bad and you get that phone call or you get that card or you get that person that just kind of steps in and gives you just a little moment of encouragement that says, I can go one more step. There were so many video clips I could have used to introduce this because encouragement is something that every single one of us needs in our everyday life. Paul outlines the idea of encouragement in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 11. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. Paul cites three things about encouragement that needs to happen. If it's really going to be encouragement, it has to be reciprocal. I encourage you, you encourage me. I encourage you, you encourage me. It has to be this constant cycle where we are encouraging each other as we're going. If encouragement only works one side, then eventually it goes away because you get frustrated, right? You're pouring out and never getting back in. Paul says, continue encouraging just as you are doing. We're supposed to encourage each other. It's supposed to go back and forth. This works in our church family. This works in our house families. This works in the neighborhood. This works everywhere if we just keep encouraging people. It's supposed to be building up. We'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But your encouragement should build you up, help you be willing to get up and take that one more round, to step back in the ring one more time, to go that one more step. It should build us up and kind of feed us for just the moment. And here's the important thing. It's not a one-time event. Paul says, as you are doing, it is supposed to be ongoing. It isn't something that I do and then I'm done with it. And oh, I can check that off my list. I encourage my person. It's supposed to be ongoing where it's constant encouragement, a constant flowing. And I think a lot of times we struggle with encouragement in the church because we don't even understand what encouragement is. I mean, we try. And I have to admit, there's many people in this church that I think are great encouragers. But you understand, encouragement is actions given to giving somebody support, confidence, or hope. That is the definition of what encouragement is. And the first thing you need to see is that it is actions. It isn't something that you pray about. It isn't something that you just kind of sit there and say, I want to do. It's not something that you set in the background and do. It is actions that you have to take every single solitary day. And you know it's encouragement because you can look at the results because it should have one of three results. Maybe it's to provide support. Maybe it is for that person who's really going through the struggles right now and their life is being wrung out. And they're kind of like the vines in the garden. You know that the blossoms are there, but you got to put the stick in the ground, that stick of encouragement, to give that vine something to wrap around so that it can have support so it can actually flourish. Encouragement can do that. Encouragement could build confidence. That person that says, I know you can, I think you can, I believe you can because I believe in you. That means so much to us. You see this and when you go out and you watch NFL football games and these people out here and the fans just get into it. They call them the 12th man. And as they cheer, it just seems to energize the team. And sometimes they've had a game where they haven't been able to move the ball 2 yards. But when the fan gets into it, it just seems like, man, they're able to do more and more. And that's what encouragement does. It builds up your confidence that I can do this. I do this because people believe in me. It could offer hope. That's what encouragement could do for us. It can provide us that, you know what? Yes, you're having a hard time right now. Yes, days are darker right now. Yes, you're having struggles. Yes, today is not perfect. But you know what? Today is only today. There's tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And you have to remember, you're worshiping a God that's in control of all of this. And there is hope for everybody. Hope because Christ gave His life. And if your encouragement doesn't accomplish one of these three things, just so you know, that's not encouragement. In fact, encouragement done the wrong way can have the opposite effect. And I put that in really big letters because I want you to see it. Encouragement is done the wrong way can actually have the opposite effect, and we call that discouragement. It persuades people not to be confident they can go. It persuades people that they don't have any support. It persuades people that there is no hope. We have to be careful when we offer encouragement Because we wanted to accomplish what we wanted to do and not just be thrown out there as tidbits of information that discourage people from even trying. Encouragement comes in two flavors. It can be gifted or it can be learned. Now again, I want to let you know something. I think we have some gifted encouragers in this church. I do. I really, really do. There are some people here that just encourage me from being in their presence. And I don't even think they realize how much encouragement it is. I remember Carol Bruce for years and years and years. I think this was her spiritual gift. Because Carol just loved to encourage people, card after card after card. It was her ministry. You never had to ask her to do it. It just got done. There are some gifted encouragers, but just so you know, I ain't one of them. As a matter of fact, I have to tell you, any skill that I have in encouraging is learned behavior. Now, there's some good news to that. Since I've had to learn how to encourage, how to be an encourager, and I didn't say I've learned everything. I still don't think I'm very good at it. But since I've had to go through the learned process, I now have things that I can pass upon you that if you don't think you're an encourager, I'm going to give you ways today that you can become an encouraging light source to other people. See, here are the things that you need to know. Things that I've learned along my lessons of encouraging. And the first thing is, different people encourage differently. Not everybody works the same way. What encourages one person may discourage another. That was news to me at one point. I thought everybody worked this. It doesn't work that way. Different people encourage differently. Therefore, you actually have to get to know people. If you're going to be an encourager, if you're going to learn how to encourage, I have to learn what makes you tick or talk, whichever way you go. I have to spend time getting to know you. I have to spend time learning your personality. I have to learn something about you. And in that, somebody learning something about you can be an encouragement in itself. You'll have to become an observer if you're going to be an encourager. You're going to have to look at people's lives. And sometimes you might even have to study people's lives if you're going to take on this idea of fulfilling the E and shine and being an encourager. You may probably have to spend some time with them. Okay? It's important. You can't encourage anonymously. There are very few cards that I get in the mail that I don't know the person. I look at them like, wow, that says something to me. It happens on occasion, but let's face it, the ones that really mean something to me are the ones that somebody said something, that they knew something was going on in my life, and they responded to that something. That's what encouragement is, because they know about my needs. They're trying to meet them, and they're encouraging me to work through them. So encouragement, how do I do it? Well, I'm going to give you four really good methods that you yourself today can become an encourager. This is less of a sermon with nice points and outlines and everything that goes with it, and more of a self-help talk class about how you today can go out and be an encourager for Christ. Because it's important. Because if you leave the E off of shine, it's just a shin. You have to have the E at the end of it to make it actually work. And so our first method that we want to see is we can spur. This is what it says in Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 through 25. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day approaching. That word spur. When I hear that word, you know what I think about? A horse. That's what I think about. A horse, to get a horse to move, what do the cowboys wear? They wear these things on the end of the boots, and they're called spurs, and they use them to kind of jab the horse in the side, and it lets the horse know it's time to giddy up, go. There are just some people, they need this. Some people require a constant flow of encouragement. They require constantly being nudged along. They require constantly to have somebody just kind of give them a, come on, next step, come on boy, move along. This is how some people work. And we need to realize that is a very encouraging moment when people see this. These are the people that run hot or cold. These are the people that when they're hot, they're hot, and when they're not, they're not. They just don't seem to have a middle. They're like the donut Christian. There's no center to them. They're all around the outsides. They're either hot or they're cold, and you have to figure out how to be the encourager to keep them hot. Cards, emails, phone calls. These are people that need constant communication. They get their encouragement in short spurts. They have to have it constantly flowing to them. Now, I just want to warn you, not everybody is like this. There are a few people that when you spur them, they just really think you're obnoxious. This is why the getting to know people is very important, because not everybody works that way. But there are a great many people that they want that constant flow to say, hey, I missed you at church. Hey, I noticed you were not here. I noticed that you weren't around. I noticed that you weren't. They just want to know that, hey, look, there is somebody that's paying attention, and they encourage me to come, not by trying to give me the lecture on why I should be here, but encourage me that, hey, look, when you're not here, this body is incomplete. When you're not here, there's something missing, and it isn't just a spot on a seat. When you're not here, this body is not what it could be, because we are better with you. That's the message we want to give them. That's what our messages need to say. If we're going to encourage these people that need to be spurred, these people that just need that little morsel to go the next step. But again, not all people are like this. There are some that fall into another category. These people are open to instruction. This is what 2 Timothy 4:2 finds. Preach the word. Be prepared in season, out of season. Correct, rebuke, and encourage. But note the backside of it. This one has the clause to it. With great patience and careful instruction. Some people like instruction. They are encouraged by being given information. These are the people that like critique. These are the people that want to sit down. They want bigger parts of your time. They want to pick your brain about things. They glean their encouragement, and they don't mind to be corrected in different areas because they seek to improve. I just want to let you know something. These are time-consuming people if you're going to be an encourager in this area. These are the people that you're not just going to be able to drop in and give them a morsel. A card is going to say something to them, but they're really more interested in you sitting down and discussing a scripture with them. A call is good, but a visit to sit down and talk about things in depth is much better with these people. A card is great, an email is great, a phone call is great, but they really want face-to-face interaction because they want instruction. They want to know what is the next step. They derive their encouragement through new understanding. They just really thrive off of the idea that I'm learning something new. These people have a catchphrase, if you've never heard them. I want a deeper relationship with Christ. Now, that's always an interesting conversation, because if you have a relationship with Christ, then it kind of grows deeper on its own. Kind of like, I never say I want a deeper relationship with my mom. I mean, I know my mom. My mom knows me. I probably know more about my mom. My mom knows everything about me. But I don't go seeking that because I know her. But these people always are looking for more and more and more, and they seek their encouragement by their relationship continuing to grow deeper. But there's a warning label with these people. Things I want you to know. If you try the instruction method with somebody that doesn't appreciate the instruction method, while you're trying to critique them and teach them, they're going to think you're judging them. While you're trying to help them and encourage them, you're actually becoming a discouragement, because they're going to get to the idea, well, I'm not doing it good enough yet. I got to have more advice, more instruction, more requirements, more to-dos, more jobs. And the idea is that they will become very discouraged because they can never live up to all the instructions. This is why the getting to know people and understanding people is so important, because those that want it in short bursts don't want you to come quoting Scripture at them. Those that want it to learn from Scripture and be encouraged by growing through a relationship don't really need you to call them and say, hey, look, you missed. Yeah, I know that. I can figure that out by myself. I missed. We have to understand who people are if we are going to shine and be encouragers. There's a third method. This is a word we're losing in our society. It's called hospitality. This is what it says in 1 Peter 4:9 for this one little verse, this one little thing. Offer hospitality to one another, and here's the key, without grumbling. Therefore, if you have to complain about offering hospitality, that is not hospitality. That is obligation. Okay, there is a difference. Hospitality is when you are able to open your life to people and invite them in without grumbling or complaining about it. It's not hard work. Now, I will tell you, this is the area that I have to work hard at. Because I am a perfectionist. If I want anybody into my life, I want it all nice and neat and tidy and clean. And so it causes me great stress sometimes to be hospitable. But I'm working on it. I understand this is an important part of encouragement because there is something intimate about bringing somebody into your house. And by the way, that's what this is talking about. Maybe we should have called it hospitality instead of hospitality. The idea of bringing somebody into your home and having them sit at your table and eat a meal with you is a very intimate thing. Bringing somebody into your home and sharing your life with them as is, dirty dishes and all, sometimes is a very humbling thing, but a very encouraging thing. Because when people come into your home, you know what they tend to find out? You aren't perfect. You have some of the same problems that I have. You have some of the same mess that I have. You have some of the same thing. It's very hard to hide everything when they're in your own house. And so this idea of hospitality can be very encouraging for a person because you're inviting them in where not everybody gets to go. We don't usually just invite random people into our house. Okay, I don't usually invite random people into my house. I have to know you before I let you come into my house. It's just the way it works. I know people that do go out and gather people on the street and bring them into their house. I'm working on it. But I just want you to know, this idea of hospitality is important. One of the things that first impressed me when I came here to this church was that after church, everybody just kind of paired up and went out to lunch. And I think we've gotten so busy that we've kind of lost that a little bit. But wouldn't it be cooler when we pair up and go to lunch if maybe every now and then we didn't go to the local restaurant and we just came to each other's houses to have lunch? We just kind of hung out with each other and we got to know each other even more, and it became this idea of intimacy in our houses, intimacy in our relationships, and we began to grow and we encourage each other because now we know we all have problems. I can be encouraged because there is an old saying, misery loves company. It does really work that way. When you know somebody else is going through the same struggles you're going through, and they are able to somehow endure, then you can be encouraged to go one more step also. This idea of hospitality, inviting people into your home, is an important aspect of our Christian fellowship, and we need to use it more. We need to have the idea that invite people in. Now, I just also want to tell you, this isn't for everybody. There are a lot of people that don't want to come to the house and have dinner. And you need to respect that. You need to be willing to say when you invite somebody to come to you and they say, no, I don't think so. Just remember, there are just some people that's not their thing. And that's okay because everybody encourages differently. They don't see going to somebody's house as a big deal. They see it as stressful because then they've got to be on their best behavior. So it's not for everybody, but it is for some. Now, there's a fourth one that I want to look at, and I'm going to read the verse, and I'm going to give you the warning label right up front. This is what it says in 2 Corinthians 13:12. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Remember I told you some things in the Bible are cultural? This is a cultural one. I do not suggest in meet and greet time that we start the holy kiss thing, okay? I just don't think it would work well in our environment. So the idea, though, is the idea here is to greet. The idea here is to greet. Now, I will tell you, we had a gentleman at our church that we came from, and his name was Aaron, and he took the holy kiss literally. And he used to, like, try to kiss everybody on the cheek. In fact, we had this one elder that really was very standoffish, and he was bald, and he snuck up behind him one day and planted one right on the top of his head when he was sitting down. It was hilarious. But I don't recommend that, but I do recommend the other part of it, the greet part, the smile part. The hello, how are you? And by the way, if you ask the question, be prepared to listen to the answer. Okay, there is this idea that we are to greet one another. There is something to be said about when you come into the building in the morning and there's somebody there to say, "Hi, how are you doing?" Do you realize that's the reason we put the coffee pot in the little basket out front with the goodies in it? It's to give that casual atmosphere that you are welcome here, and we want you to feel welcome and greeted as you come in to worship. Because we're supposed to greet one another. If you want a hug, that's fine. The kissing, I'll let you make your own decision on that. But there is this idea that when you come into the fellowship here, that it should be warm and welcome, and everybody should feel okay, whether your life is falling apart or not, whether things have gotten complicated or not, whether you're struggling or not. You should have an environment that you come in, and the first thing you should see is a smiling face welcoming you here. It's a greeting. But it extends beyond just here. Out in the community, when we're out there, we should be greeting people. Have you ever noticed when you go through the checkout line and you and your girl and the lady is wearing a name tag, or the guy is wearing a name tag, and it has something remarkable on them, their name. And when you greet that person and you read their name, you'd be surprised. I mean, like, how do you know my name? Well, it's written right there on your shirt. We should be greeting people because it opens the opportunity to share Christ with people. It gives us the shine perspective because it lets us see that they're more than just the next person on my list. We should be greeting people on a regular basis. Now, minus the kiss. Okay? I'm just going to tell you that. Nobody at the grocery store wants you to kiss them. Okay? Well, unless you're really related to them. But minus the kiss, we should be greeting one another. And then we get some results out of this encouragement. Some things for each and every one of us. Some tangible results. Paul tells us when you encourage, this is what happens. My goal is that you may be encouraged in heart and united in love, so they may have the full riches of complete understanding, in order that they may know the mysteries of God, namely Christ. You see those words highlighted in green? United in love. When you're encouraging somebody and you're involved in somebody's life, it is very hard for you to have a disagreement with them. Not impossible. But when you do have a disagreement with them, it goes over more quickly because you're involved in each other's lives and we're communicating with each other. And I understand you're encouraging me and I'm encouraging you. And so if I have a disagreement, I'm actually cutting off my own encouragement supply. So that we get over this and we become a unified body. The things that really get on our nerves, they kind of go to the side because, you know what? Some people just are annoying. I can be one of those people. Ask my family. I'm good at it. My son thinks I might have a PhD in annoyance somewhere that I don't put up on my wall because I can be an annoying person. But I do understand the fact that this idea that we are united. Our differences don't separate us. Our differences bring us together so that we can have a complete understanding, so that we can be completed in who we are. And as we are completed, we can understand who Christ is, and then people begin to look at us and they're like, wow, that's where I'd like to be. I could use some encouragement in my life. As you move on to 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11, it says, "Finally, brothers and sisters, rejoice, strive for full restoration. Encourage one another, be of one mind, live in peace, and the God of love and peace will be with you." What does encouragement do for us? It gives us full restoration. It allows us to put our differences and our struggles aside so that we can be fully restored to a relationship. It gives us one mind. It lets us begin to think alike, to think like we should as one family. Now, when I say we think alike, again, that doesn't mean we're never going to have a difference of opinion. If you put two people in a room, you're going to have a difference of opinion. Sometimes you put one person in a room, they will disagree with themselves just because they're disagreeable. It's just the way it works. So you have to understand, this is not remove disagreement, but what it does is it gives us the one mind, because what is our mind about? Well, in the church, our mind is about leading others to Christ. And if I can focus on that, if I can focus on those things, then I get to live in peace. This doesn't mean that when we live in peace, we're never going to have a problem. It doesn't mean we live in peace that we're never going to have a conflict. When we live in peace, what it means is I am living in peace with God. And as I live in peace with God, that peace will flow through me. And the disagreements and the arguments, they just won't be so big. You know, this isn't just church relationship. This is family relationship. If we became better encouragers in our family, we may see a difference in the way our family works. When we become a better relationship, we become better encouragers in our workplace, we may see a difference in the way our workplace works. If we become better encouragers in our church, we will see a way that our church changes. Because people will begin to look on the outside, saying, whatever they've got, I want some of that. I want to take you back about almost 5 years. We started this voyage, this journey, with a sermon series called The Snapshot Church. And we broke this verse down, and I want to read it to you. And as I read it to you, now that you've got the whole picture, you've got all the pieces, you understand what Shine is all about, what this idea of leading people to Christ is, I want you to listen to this, and you will be able to immediately see the pieces as they fall in place in the very first church that we ever hear about. It's found in Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47. They, the church, devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold their property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all people. And then look at the natural result. And the Lord added to their numbers daily those were being saved. Do you see it? These people were shining the light of Christ right there in their community. Each and every day, they ate together, they met together, they worshiped together, they served together. When they saw needs, even if it meant I had to go sell a possession to meet that need, that's what they did. And because of that shine, God began adding to them. You know what's missing in this whole picture? I pointed this out when we preached this sermon series 5 years ago. What's missing is there was no outreach program. You know why? They didn't need one. Because people looked at their lives and they said, I want that. I want to be involved in that. And so they began to be added to every single day because they were just inviting. And so here we go. Now you've got all the pieces. Now you understand exactly what we're trying to do. I want to know, are you ready? We've been putting these pieces in place for 5 years. We put the mission, we put the vision, we put the ideas, and now I've given you the how-tos. Are you ready to start doing the how? Are you ready to see the field, live between the trees, and then shine your light to the world? See, this is what Parkview Christian Church is going to be all about. It's going to be about shining the light to a world. And that may cause some of us to struggle because that means if it doesn't shine, we don't do. If it doesn't shine the light, then it's not something that we want to participate in. We want to shine the light to the world. Now I want you to notice what happened as they were shining that light. Every single one of their needs were met. Their worship was done. Their serving was there. Nobody got left behind. Nobody was left out. But the mentality had to change to the idea that we're here to reach out. We're not here to take our lamp and put it under a bowl and just keep it inside of our building and hope that it doesn't go out until I'm dead. We are here to take that light into a world and hang it up nice and bright and say, you know what? We have the answer for any question that you've got. Because there is only one answer for the human condition, and that's Jesus.